The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. On today's episode, episode number 148, entitled How to Use Light Therapy to Boost Your Testosterone, Speed Up Muscle Recovery, and Increase Your Energy, I chat with Scott Nelson. Scott Nelson is a light therapy expert and the co-creator of the photobiomodulation device known as the Juve Light. In today's episode, Scott talks all about the use of light therapy, also known as photobiomodulation, to improve a multitude of health conditions. He dives into the science behind light therapy, how it affects our cells and our bodies, and why it can immediately make a huge impact on your health. Photobiomodulation is incredibly popular in the biohacking community, and for good reason. It works. If you're wondering how to use light therapy to improve your immune system, cognitive function, cellular energy, and recover faster after workouts, check this episode out now. You are going to love it. Hey, just a quick reminder to sign yourself up for the Elite Man newsletter if you haven't yet. Get behind-the-scenes access to bonus tips, strategies, and techniques to becoming the best man you can be, exclusively on the Elite Man newsletter. Go to elitemanmagazine.com/newsletter and sign yourself up right now. Again, that's elitemanmagazine.com/newsletter. And now, a quick word from our fantastic sponsors. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, strength trainers, vegans, and more. You, being a badass Elite Man podcast listener, are almost certainly among these health-conscious people. That's why you should really listen up. Health IQ can save customers up to 33% because physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are inactive. So they reward you for being active and taking care of yourself. How cool is that? Look, you never know what's going to happen, especially if you're married, have children, or you've had personal scares or family members dealing with health issues. This is something you definitely cannot take lightly. It's so important to make sure your loved ones are kept safe no matter what, and Health IQ helps you do that. It's the fastest growing life insurance company in the world with over $5 billion in coverage, and they're rated 9.6 out of 10 by Trustpilot. Do yourself and your family a huge favor and check out Health IQ. To see if you qualify for an incredible savings of up to 33%, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/eliteman or mention the promo code ELITEMAN when you talk to a Health IQ agent. Again, that's healthiq.com/eliteman. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from ElitemanMagazine.com, and my guest today is Scott Nelson from Juve Light. Scott, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
I really appreciate you having me on, Justin. Excited for the conversation.
Yeah, man, I'm really excited as well. I know you're the founder or co-founder of Juve Light, which I got a chance to try out about a month ago and have been loving it ever since. I've looked up, I've researched photobiomodulation in the past several times, hearing it from different guys like Ben Greenfield, Dr. Mercola, and some other big names in sort of the health biohacking industry. So I want to pick your brain about kind of how you came up with this light, the Juve Light, the science behind photobiomodulation, why it works, why it's so important, and all the aspects surrounding light therapy, red light and infrared light therapy, which is catching on of, you know, the last couple of years and becoming more and more popular.
Yeah, awesome. It's going to make for a good discussion for sure.
Scott, let's just kind of start from the beginning. How did you get into this whole, I guess, light therapy thing? Like, I know you have a background in med tech and kind of working with different traditional medical devices, but how did you come up with working specifically with the light therapy, the infrared lights you have now?
Sure. I'll say that you were more open-minded to the whole photobiomodulation or light therapy game than I probably was when I first when I first started learning about it. So just to kind of rewind the clock a little bit, we founded Juve as it's for all practical purposes still a family business. My co-founders are my brother-in-law and sister-in-law, and then my wife. And so I mention that only because my brother-in-law and I were first exposed to light therapy, or introduced to it, I should say, through our wives. They had purchased a quote unquote red light therapy package from a local spa here in Minneapolis 3-ish years ago, something like that. And of course, he's an engineer, and I've spent my entire career in the traditional medical device space. So when they first told us that they were doing this, it was kind of like, seems kind of woo-woo, you know, I don't know, like, yeah, go for it. It's probably not something for me. You know what I mean? But they went consistently to the spa, like probably 5 or 6 times a week for over the course of like 2 or 3 months. And they saw actually really good benefits, mostly related to their skin, but good benefits from it nonetheless. But just like most people, they didn't want to continue to go to a spa, you know, every day of the week. It's just onerous. It's time consuming. It's not overly budget friendly either. So my sister-in-law, Melissa, actually, you know, asked Justin, who's an engineer. She was like, hey, can you like build me some DIY kind of home solution that we can use at home? Because I don't want to go to the spa every day anymore. I really like the therapy. And I want, you know, the rest of our family to benefit. And so Justin played around with some prototypes, and sort of that's where we, you know, that's where we started this thing. But to answer your question about how we, you know, got into photobiomodulation, it was largely that's the story. But the science in and of itself is really like was really shockingly surprising to both Justin and myself. I mean, we are naturally cynical, as I mentioned before. But when we started pouring into the research and looking at the published literature, it was really, really surprising how much peer-reviewed published data there is with respect to photobiomodulation or light therapy. It's endless. I mean, we have a database of over 2,000 published studies that speak to the benefits of certain wavelengths of light. So it was really quite shocking how much published literature there is, but yet most people don't even think about light, or don't even think about it as a therapy. If they think about light, they think about avoiding the natural sunlight because of the, you know, potentially harmful UVA wavelengths. And so it's really interesting topic. Hopefully we can make it, you know, pretty educational for, you know, the folks that are listening to this. But light and how our bodies metabolize light is really quite interesting. And for the most part, not talked about a lot in the world we live in today.
Yeah, I got to speak to Dr. Michael Hamblin a while back on photobiomodulation, and like you said, I mean, there's over 2,000 published studies. The literature on it is very impressive, and they've been doing it. I don't know, I think probably even before the 60s, I think, or mm-hmm. maybe around that time they started kind of doing the work on this, and I forget what they initially started doing this on, but it might have been for cancer or something along those lines. But the benefits of photobiomodulation using light therapy in different wavelengths, I mean, across the board, it just helps so many different conditions. It's not like it's going to – or there hasn't there hasn't been literature to say it cures cancer or it cures, say, Alzheimer's disease or things like that. But it certainly can help those different types of conditions. And I think the more research that goes into it, it's just going to become more and more apparent that, like, it's across the board healthy for you when you get the right dosage of light therapy. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. You hit it spot on. And I'm glad you mentioned Dr. Michael Hamblin. He's actually on our scientific advisory board. He's arguably one of the world's leading researchers in the field. He runs his own lab at Harvard, his own photomedicine lab. Great guy, incredibly sharp, incredibly knowledgeable, yeah. But just he's a fun guy to talk with as well. He's just kind of he makes light of light, if that pun fully intended there. To your point about the endless benefits, it's when you read about them, you see helps, you know, enhance muscle recovery and athletic performance, increases testosterone production, you know, helps enhance skin tone and texture, reduces wrinkles, enhances cognitive function. I mean, there's such a laundry list of benefits. It's naturally for most people to be kind of skeptical of that kind of thing, but it's that far ranging in terms of the benefits because of the mechanism of action at a cellular level. And so because you're enhancing normal cellular function and the production of ATP, you get such a wide range of benefits because of that core mechanism of action.
So, Scott, can you just kind of dive into what is actually happening when the light pierces through the skin, when it actually gets into the cells, when it starts to work on the mitochondria in your cells? Like, what is the what's the actual like science behind it? I'm sure you know this, you know, much better than I do at this point.
Yeah, sure. No, I'm happy to explain. We'll get a little bit technical here. So those of you that don't mind, or hopefully don't mind, that we get a little bit geeky here. But there's certain wavelengths of light that have a really unique ability to enhance cellular function, specifically during the fourth phase of cellular respiration. And those wavelengths of white light fall within something called the what researchers call the optical or therapeutic window, which is the range from about 600 nanometers to about 1,000 nanometers. So kind of the red and the near infrared. So not the far infrared that you often see in saunas, which I think we can hopefully get to, like the differences between photobiomodulation and something like a sauna. But the wavelengths that are typically used in the world of photobiomodulation are in the red and near infrared range in that optical window that I mentioned. And so what happens is, in order to kind of understand why those wavelengths of light are beneficial, you kind of have to understand what's going on during that fourth phase of cellular respiration. And so normally what's healthy is that there's an enzyme during that phase of cellular respiration called cytochrome C oxidase. Or CCO is the acronym that's often used in clinical literature. And what that enzyme does is it actually helps oxygen bind with NADH to form hydrogen ions that then produce ATP synthase, which is a precursor to ATP. And so that enzyme, cytochrome C oxidase, is really important. But when our cells are under stress from a wide variety of reasons, they can produce an overabundance of nitric oxide. And most, you know, I'm sure your audience is familiar or loosely familiar with nitric oxide. It can be good, but in this scenario, during the fourth phase of cellular respiration, an overabundance of nitric oxide actually competes with oxygen and binds to that enzyme, cytochrome C oxidase. So, when our cells are stressed, nitric oxide binds to cytochrome C oxidase. And so that's really crucial because those certain wavelengths of red and near infrared light actually help to break that bond between nitric oxide and cytochrome C oxidase. That then frees up CCO to do what it's supposed to do, and then it also releases nitric oxide, which is why a lot of people, when they use light therapy, report a pump, a muscle pump, or vasodilation, because nitric oxide is then freed up and distributed throughout the body. And so that's sort of what's happening at the cellular level. And because of that core mechanism of action, there's such a wide range of benefits that I kind of mentioned before.
Yeah, that's really cool. Is that like the only action that's happening, or is there multiple things going on?
No, it's a really good question. That's sort of the core theory as to what's happening. And I guess I call that out just because the caveat there is that even though this research around photobiomodulation dates back to, you know, kind of the mid 20th century, it's over the last 10 to 20 years, the amount of clinical research has increased dramatically because of the benefits of these wavelengths of light. And so there's still, I mean, researchers like Dr. Hamlin are still figuring this out, you know, guys that are much smarter than me. But to your point, that's the core theory. There's other theories as to what's going on at a cellular level, enhanced gene transcription. There's cell, you know, enhanced cell cycle progression. Red and near infrared help to shift cellular redox potential in the direction of greater oxidation. So there's other things going on too, but that core mechanism of action often points to the activation of that enzyme cytochrome C oxidase, which leads to the production of ATP.
Cool, love it. Yeah, we totally geek out on this show all the time. Some of the people follow it and, you know, can understand most of it. Some of the people really get it. We have some like really crazy biohacking health enthusiasts in our audience, and then some of the people like me just kind of, you know, sort of understand it and can get away with just kind of understanding the basics of it, which I think is good enough for most people.
Sure.
But yeah, thanks for kind of breaking that down for us. So essentially, what's happening with this is ATP is being formed, which is energy in the body and how we as human beings, how we function and how we live. And so when you use this, it's kind of like, and I think I heard, it might have been from Dr. Hamlin that I heard this comparison, it might have been from somebody else, but we as human beings, we use light sort of like plants use light. Like you use it to take in energy, and it's not like people think like you need water, you need food, and that's like your energy, but light also plays a big role, and I think it's often overlooked, you know, the role that it actually plays in our cells, and it can actually do a lot of the same things that say water or food can do.
No, you're right. I'm glad you brought it up, because that's oftentimes how we kind of first explain light therapy to someone that's completely unfamiliar with it. I know your audience is a little bit more, they're more health enthusiasts, some are biohackers, et cetera. But generally speaking, I always like to use the comparison that most people are kind of, they understand macronutrients, right? Like carbohydrates, fats, proteins, and how our bodies metabolize those macronutrients. But, what at the end of the day, those macronutrients are broken down, into different micronutrients, and then they're absorbed in different ways and metabolized in different ways at a cellular level. Where light is not terribly different in the sense that our bodies metabolize different wavelengths of light in various ways, and so that's why something like blue light in the evening is not ideal, because that you know, our bodies think it's morning, right? It affects our circadian rhythm. Red and near infrared light, or specific wavelengths in that spectrum, in the red and near infrared spectrum, our bodies metabolize those wavelengths in different ways. And so I think as more and more focus and money is poured into research around photobiomodulation, we'll probably discover that even other colors have different impacts, you know, greens, yellows, et cetera. But right now there's most of the research is around red, and near infrared wavelengths for the purposes of photobiomodulation.
So is the like metabolism, is the same dynamic happening if, say, you're messing around on the computer before bed? Like, is your body producing or taking in the blue light from, say, the computer screen the same way it takes in the red light from, say, a device like yours?
I would say to a certain extent, yes, but the intensity from a device like a computer, for example, the blue light's not going to be overly intense, and so it's really just a shock to your system in terms of the circadian rhythm, of unbalancing your circadian rhythm. Now, having said that, there is some photobiomodulation devices that do deliver blue light, usually kind of in the lower 400 nanometer range, for the purposes of killing bacteria. And so, but those devices are delivering blue light at a very high intensity. So it's a little bit different, because you're not going to get that same intensity looking at a computer screen. But nonetheless, you know, it's not healthy to probably be digesting or metabolizing blue light at night because of the imbalances in your circadian rhythm.
Yeah, this is something I think a lot of people struggle with, including me. I'm always doing work, you know, late. I'm kind of a night owl. And doing work on the laptop late certainly doesn't help that. But the cool thing actually I've been doing with your device and using the red light therapy is I've actually been using it right before bed. So I'll use it for, I think, you know, probably 10, 12 minutes, just totally immersing myself in the red light. And actually, I've had problems with headache. I've had insomnia problems in the past. So I'm using it like specifically on my face, like on my head, on my head area. Mm-hmm. And what I find after is that it actually gets me kind of sleepy and gets me ready for bed, which I think you can kind of elaborate on why that's working. And I've actually been sleeping a lot better the past few weeks compared to, say, a couple of months ago when I had problems with insomnia and kind of waking up in the middle of the night kind of stuff. So I'm actually really fascinated with the science behind the red light therapy, specifically on its kind of effect on sleep and how that works.
Right. No, it's a really good point. I'm glad you mentioned, you know, sleep in general. Not and before we kind of get into sort of what, you know, the theories as to why it's beneficial for, you know, for help inducing sleep. But there is clinical study, you know, peer-reviewed clinical research that supports this too. I mean, I'm recalling a relatively small participant size. I think it was roughly 20 basketball players that used red and near infrared light before sleep. And granted, the measures were relatively quantitative or qualitative in nature, but the study did support the use of light therapy to enhance sleep, to better enhance sleep. And that kind of like that parlays into like the concept of sort of looking at and living with a little bit more appreciation for our ancestors, right? So before you know, the advanced world that we live in with, you know, artificial light, You know, we woke up, our ancestors woke up to the morning sunrise and then fell asleep after, you know, after the sunset. And when you look at the natural spectrum of light, there is more red and near infrared light delivered in both the morning and the evening. And so, you know, not only is, you know, that's, you know, if you're looking to biohack, you know, light in general, it's a good idea to use red and or near infrared light in the mornings and the evenings because of that. But specific to kind of like your comment about just getting ready for bed, I heard, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Dr. Kirk Parsley. He's kind of a sleep, kind of a guru when it comes to sleep, former Navy SEAL, really, really cool guy. But I heard him describe it once that, and I thought it was a good analogy. It's like, you know, when we think about our ancestors, they, there was a period of like getting ready for bed, right? You just didn't like work on your computer until 10, which I'm guilty of as well. You didn't just work on like a computer or on your phone until like 10 or 11 at night and then fall asleep. Like there was like the sun set and there was no artificial light. And so, you know, you weren't exposed to, you know, wavelengths of light that could potentially disrupt your circadian rhythm and disrupt your sleep. Well, now it's commonplace for us to use artificial lighting in our houses, especially during the winter times like this, where you need artificial light to see anything. And so it makes sense that that would potentially disrupt our circadian rhythm by using wavelengths of light that aren't natural to the sunrise and the sunset. Is that making sense?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it makes total sense. And, 10 or 11, man, that's being really generous. I'm thinking 2-3 in the morning, man. I'm totally fucked when it comes to this.
Yeah, you know what's funny about that is I wouldn't consider myself like overly sensitive to just biohacks in general. I mean, I consider myself a health enthusiast for sure, but it's not like I'm going to be trying every gadget under the sun. But one of the things that I note personally that I noticed the biggest impact is wearing blue blocking glasses at night. In particular, I'll give Swanee's the Swanee blue blockers a little call out here. But I wear those blue blocking glasses in the evenings, and that's probably one of the biggest like things that I notice in terms of when I put those on. You know, when the sun sets, when I put those on around, you know, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock or so at night, like my body physically starts to shut down to the point where if I actually have to get work done, like on a computer, and I'm wearing those glasses, I it's hard for me just cause I begin to really get sleepy when I put those glasses on. So, there's definitely, anecdotally, like I personally notice a huge difference when I wear blue blocking glasses in the evenings for sure.
Yeah, I got a pair of blue blocking glasses a while back, a couple of years ago, and sort of dabbled with them a bit at night. And I liked them for a little while, but then, I don't know, I just kind of got lazy with using them and just sort of stopped using them. You know, it wasn't – or at least I kind of blamed the glasses for not allowing me to sleep because I was getting insomnia at the time, and I was like, you know, fuck these glasses. They don't work. But, you know, it's probably – I mean, to be honest, it was a number of other things kind of going on. And to say the glasses didn't work or to blame the glasses entirely for the sleep issues I was having at the time, I don't think is fair. But, yeah, I've kind of been lazy in going back to them. And, you know, maybe it was the quality of the brand of the glasses. I mean, they were like $10 on Amazon, just kind of random glasses that I found. So, I mean, it could have been that. I know James, we've had him on the show in the past. He's got a great product.
Yeah.
You know, I might have to just switch over to the Swanees at some point, give them another crack. But yeah, I do like the function of them, the function of the glasses.
Sure, and I think maybe his look a little bit better than others, where you're not totally embarrassed to wear them out in public. Yeah.
Going back to what you mentioned earlier with the difference between the light and say saunas and the light that you guys have in your device and other infrared light or red light therapies, what's the difference there, and how does one work and one doesn't?
Sure. Yeah. And that's actually, you know, for those that are listening that are kind of thinking like, okay, this whole light thing is kind of interesting. I'm hearing more about it. The natural next question is, okay, I see all these sauna companies, and if you're in a big metropolitan area, there's a lot of like stand up like sauna shops anymore that are, you know, where you can go get a sauna session, just get a random sauna session on a, and pay for it on a per session basis. But, the natural next question is like, is this the same as an infrared sauna? Because most sauna companies advertise their saunas as infrared saunas. And so it's, to answer that question, it's a natural question, but no, like they're completely distinct, therapies altogether. They work very differently on a cellular level. And that's because the wavelengths are different. So if you're using a sauna, and it doesn't have to be an infrared sauna, but the whole purpose of a sauna is to actually heat up our core body temperature in order to induce heat shock protein. So if you're using an infrared sauna, ideally you want it to be able to heat up to, you know, greater than around 140 degrees Fahrenheit. If you're using a steam-based sauna, it's a little bit easier to get the temperature up faster than an infrared sauna. But when it comes to sauna, you really want to be looking at far infrared saunas. So when you break down sort of the infrared spectrum of light, you have IRA or infrared A wavelengths, infrared B wavelengths, and then far infrared or infrared C wavelengths. And with saunas, you really want those far infrared wavelengths, those IRC wavelengths. Those are therapeutic in nature because they heat up your body to a greater extent. Whereas with light therapy or photobiomodulation or PBM, if we want to be short with it, you're really looking for very specific wavelengths of light in that red and near infrared range. Ideally, kind of in the range of roughly about 630 to about 670, and then in the near infrared range of roughly 810 to about 870 or so, 860, something like that. And so with those wavelengths in those ranges that I just mentioned, those have the unique ability to activate cytochrome C oxidase and that cascade of events that happens after. So sauna therapy and photobiomodulation, great therapies, just distinctly different in terms of the mechanism of action.
That's an interesting point too. What is the major difference between infrared and then red and the nanometers that are used for each one? Like, why are they not just the same nanometers, and what's the actual difference between the two?
I know the
device you have actually uses both, right?
Our devices come in three different configurations. So red, near infrared, or a 50-50 configuration of both wavelengths. Okay. With saunas, it's ideal to look for a far infrared sauna, because with far infrared wavelengths, especially going out to, 15,000 nanometers, which is a big spectrum when you think about it, or a wide spectrum is probably the better way to say that. Those far infrared wavelengths do have a unique ability to generate more heat in our body, to raise our core body temperature. And that's what you want with the sauna. The whole goal is to heat up your body, to induce heat shock proteins and the corresponding benefits that come from that. You're not going to be able to generate much heat with red or near infrared wavelengths. In fact, very, very little heat. So if you see near infrared wavelengths being marketed or advertised for the purposes of a sauna, it really doesn't make sense, because they don't generate they don't generate much heat at all. And so it's kind of the concept of like a near infrared sauna is a little bit like a contradiction in terms, because you can't heat up your body with near infrared wavelengths. So it's just, they're just different therapies. It's just like, at a high level, I would think about saunas, really look for far infrared saunas that can heat up your body. You actually want to sweat. You want to be hot inside of a sauna. That's a good thing. Whereas with photobiomodulation, you really shouldn't be hot. The wavelengths that you're looking for, it's much more narrow range of wavelengths that don't generate much heat, but do have a unique impact at a cellular level.
Hey, just a quick reminder to go to healthiq.com/eliteman and take the Health IQ quiz, which will determine if you qualify for the incredible savings of up to 33% on their life insurance. Again, that's healthiq.com/eliteman and take the quiz to see if your health is elite. So I think what I'm thinking, and what some people may be thinking, is if the nanometers are like 15,000 on the far infrared saunas or some of the sauna lights, wouldn't that be, say, better than, because it's a lot more than, say, 630 to 870 in the ranges of the infrared and red light therapies, red lights that you have in the devices?
Yeah, so the further out the wavelength, that doesn't necessarily there's not a one-to-one correlation with depth of penetration. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at like the therapeutic range of far infrared, like that far infrared spectrum, you're probably going to get the biggest bang for your buck when you look at kind of that 5,000 to 15,000 nanometer range, because those wavelengths are going to generate the most heat in your body. And so that's which is beneficial for the purposes of a sauna. But if your aim is to use light therapy or photobiomodulation, those far infrared wavelengths actually are absorbed very readily in the by water in our skin, and so they don't penetrate that deep for the purposes of photobiomodulation. So they're not going to really have much of an impact because the water in our skin is absorbing those wavelengths.
Okay, gotcha. So almost like your body is, because it's too high, maybe because it's too high, the nanometers are too high, your body takes over and the water breaks it down before it can actually get into the cells, whereas the other one more like kind of covertly sneaks in and does its work in the cells. Is that kind of accurate?
Yeah, kind of to a certain extent. Do you remember me mentioning that optical or therapeutic window? I mentioned it before and we were kind of getting into the mechanism of action. Yep. There's actually a graph on our website where we call this out, but wavelengths above about 1,000 nanometers, kind of going out to about, all the way out to 15,000 nanometers, those are readily absorbed by water, and because, if you're absorbing that infrared wavelength through your skin, most of that's going to be absorbed by, by water in the cells of your dermis and epidermis of your skin. Whereas wavelengths below about 600 nanometers or so, those are readily absorbed in your blood. And so if you're doing something like, blood irradiation or photobiomodulation of blood, for example, you probably want to be using wavelengths less than 600 nanometers. But between about 600 and about 1,000, that optical window, those are the wavelengths that can uniquely penetrate tissues of our skin and have that unique ability to break the bond between nitric oxide and cytochrome C oxidase. So, cool. I don't know if we went too deep there, but it can get kind of technical and kind of confusing. But I guess to sum it up with saunas, you really want to be looking for something that generates heat, and if it's an infrared sauna, you really want to be in that far infrared spectrum. Whereas with light therapy or photobiomodulation, you want to be red and then near infrared, so wavelengths below 900 nanometers.
Cool. No, that actually makes a lot of sense. I'm glad you kind of explained that a little better for us. It's kind of a lot more clear for me too.
Just real quick, Justin, it's not too dissimilar. Like when people are first like getting used to macronutrients, and how much fat should they be consuming a day, how much protein, how many carbohydrates, et cetera. It's not too dissimilar to thinking about light in the same way. Like what type of wavelengths is my body metabolizing during the day? If I'm in an office from, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. and I've got no sunlight because it's the winter and all I'm being exposed to is artificial light, that's not ideal. That's just not ideal because our bodies are metabolizing that artificial light, on a consistent basis. And so it's not like these different wavelengths of light can, at the outset can seem kind of technical, kind of confusing. But if you just start to dig into it a little bit, it starts to begin to make a little bit more sense that the wavelength is really important and certain wavelengths have different impacts at a cellular level.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, man. And I think you're right. Like going back to, trying to base it on how things naturally are supposed to be is getting it as close to like the way nature intended as possible, like with the different lights, like blue sort of during the day to kind of wake you up, and then maybe the red at night or like early in the morning, like in the artificial light, trying to reduce that as much as possible and just getting the natural lights. Just to clarify, I think one other thing too with that last point though is, was there any major difference in the mechanism between red or near infrared light and how they specifically work, or do they kind of just do the same things and just have different ranges of nanometers that they work?
Yep. So the core mechanism of action between red and near infrared light is very similar. But the difference though is the depth of penetration between the red and near infrared wavelengths. So red wavelengths tend to be absorbed, or the majority of that energy is absorbed more superficially in our body, so typically the dermis and epidermis of our skin, whereas near-infrared, or IRA wavelengths, are absorbed a little bit deeper. And so when you look at like clinical literature, that's why most of the studies on light therapy or PBM with respect to joint pain, muscle recovery, et cetera, they're often using near-infrared wavelengths between about 830 and 850, maybe a little bit higher, because those wavelengths have a better ability to penetrate into deeper tissue. Whereas if you look at studies with respect to skin health, wrinkle reduction, overall skin tone and texture, et cetera. They're obviously more qualitative in nature, but those wavelengths that are typically used are more in the red spectrum because most of that energy is absorbed in your skin.
Cool. Yeah, makes a lot of sense. That's kind of what I thought. I just forgot which one did which.
Sure, yeah.
So talking about devices like yours or similar devices, people want to actually try this out. They want to, you know, start kind of messing around and biohacking the photobiomodulation world. What is kind of the way you go about doing it? How do you set this up? How often do you use the light? What do you kind of recommend as far as how close you should be to it? Should it be touching your skin? Can it burn you? Like what kind of those questions pop up? What are some of the recommendations you have, whether it's, you know, using a device like yours or you know, some of the other ones out there?
Sure. Yep. So it's understanding energy, the energy dose or the intensity or your radiance delivered from the device is pretty important in order to help answer those questions. And so like with our devices, we tried to optimize for three things when it came to our devices. One is delivering clinically proven wavelengths, you know, in the red and near infrared spectrum. Most devices you'll find, if you do a little diligence, get that right. It's kind of hard to get that wrong, to be honest. But definitely, if you're looking, if you're shopping for a light therapy device, definitely make sure it's delivering. Well, one, the company actually is transparent about the wavelengths that are being delivered through the light, but also that they're in that you know that red and near infrared spectrum. So that's really important is the wavelengths of light. And then two is the probably arguably the most difficult sometimes to find is the irradiance delivered from the device. And that's the intensity. And if you know the irradiance or intensity of the device, you can figure out how long you need to use it. So as an example, you can go on Amazon and look and pull up red light therapy devices, and there's a laundry list of them. Most of them are either small, little handheld devices, and or they're really underpowered, meaning the company either doesn't disclose the irradiance, or if they do, it's so low powered that you have to use the device for hours per day. And I don't know about you, but most people, I don't think have time. I'm in the light therapy game, and I wouldn't have time to use a device for 2 hours a day. So that's kind of the issues you typically see when looking for light therapy devices. So it's just crucial to make sure you're getting a device that delivers clinically proven wavelengths in that red and near infrared spectrum. Make sure it's delivering a high power or a high enough intensity where you don't have to use it for a prolonged period of time. So with our devices, for example, at the recommended treatment distance of about 6 inches away, you're getting well over 100 milliwatts per square centimeter, which calculates, it kind of depends on the wavelength configuration you're using, but it calculates to about 6 joules per minute at that recommended treatment distance. So if you use the device for about 8 minutes, you're getting close to 50 joules in that eight minute time frame, which is really beneficial even for like the purposes of like recovering from joint pain, enhancing muscle recovery, et cetera. If you were just interested in skin health benefits, quite honestly, you only really need to use our device for a couple minutes a day, and you'll get plenty of energy to support, you know, enhanced skin tone and texture, reduction of wrinkles, the fading of scars, et cetera. So it kind of depends on what you're trying to treat, but the intensity of the device is really important because that allows you to better understand how much energy you really need for what you're trying to treat.
What was the recommendation on time for some of these things? Like, can you just kind of throw out a couple of different maybe treatment protocols you'd have for various conditions?
Yep. So if you're using a high powered device like our device, for example, something that delivers over 100 milliwatts per square centimeter, if you're just interested in skin health, that's all you were interested, that's all you cared about, you really only need to use it for about three to five minutes, I would say, at a distance of about 6 inches away. Now, with most of our customers, they're interested in more than just skin health. So they're interested in, you know, a knee that's been aching them, or they're an athlete and they want to enhance their, you know, either muscle recovery or enhance their pre-training performance. And so in that scenario, we recommend going a little bit longer. So instead of, you know, 3 to 5 minutes, actually go more like 8 to 10 minutes at least. And there's some benefits that you could argue up to, you know, up to 15 minutes per treatment area. But once you get past about 15 minutes, because of that dosage of energy is so high, there's not really a lot of clinical data that supports doses of energy that are anything more than what you're getting in 15 minutes with our device.
Okay, and I guess the next question – well, actually, the first question before I jump on the next question is, can you can you get like burned from this? Like you I know you mentioned like 6 inches away. I think I read 4 to 6 inches away somewhere, something like that. Can you get burned if you're too close or if you're like touching the device or, you know, your device or some of these other devices out there? Can you actually get like skin burn or like cellular burning if you get too close to it?
No, it's a great question. So with our devices, no, we use medical grade LED chipsets that are really efficient and do not generate, much heat. So with our devices, no, there's no big concern the closer you get. Now, just keep in mind, the closer you get, the greater the amount of energy that's being delivered to your body because irradiance, is a function of the distance you are from the device. So, if you were like an inch away, for example, you don't need to go the full, you know, 8-10 minutes. You could probably cut that in half at least if you're that close to the device. Now, that's why I kind of mentioned it's hard to provide definitive guidance with other devices just because so many other devices don't provide the irradiance or the intensity, or if they do, they're really underpowered. And so if you're using a light therapy device, I guess the one thing I'd say about that is if you're using a light therapy device and it gets really hot, that's not ideal. You're probably using a source of light that's not ideal for the purposes of photobiomodulation. So if it's something that gets hot, it's probably something that's probably designed a little bit more for the purposes of a sauna. And so that's if I was using a light therapy device that got hot, I would really question which wavelengths were being delivered from that device. Because most likely if it's getting hot, it's a pretty broad spectrum of wavelengths that aren't overly efficacious for the purposes of light therapy.
Okay. But just to be clear, there is a little bit of heat emanating from devices, right? But nothing like that would make you start sweating or anything like
that.
Yeah.
Exactly. So like with our device, I think the one that you have is the 50-50 configuration of both wavelengths. There's a little bit of warmth. I mean, I kind of think it feels like almost like a 75 degree day out on the
I kind of like it. I like
yeah. It's pretty soothing.
I take my shirt off too, and it's kind of
there you go.
Just kind of get the whole body soaking in on it. And it feels nice. It's like a nice little, like you said, 75 day out in the sun kind of feels like.
Yeah. It's not, well, especially like when you head into like the winter months. I mean, we have a lot of people that, myself included, that like really enjoy the soothing nature of that. It's a subtle heat. Definitely won't burn you at all.
Yeah.
But definitely not hot to the touch, but does generate a little bit of heat. If you were using like the all near infrared version of our device, for example, that generates even a little bit more heat. I mean, it's not noticeable. It's certainly not going to be hot to the touch, but if you actually held a thermometer in front of the device, it'd be a little bit warmer just because those near infrared wavelengths do generate a little bit more heat than red wavelengths alone.
Yeah, no, totally. Like you said, it's a good warmth. It's not like it's even hot. It's just kind of like, you know, slightly, you know, you kind of notice after like maybe 5 or 10 minutes, it's like, you know, you feel like a little warmth on your skin, which, like I said, I totally like it. And it feels like you're outside in the sun. Scott, is there any kind of side effects to this at all? Or can you overdo it? Like, why not, if, you know, we're in this culture where, you know, more is always better, or we think doing more is better. Can you overdo this if you do this for, say, an hour or something, you know, 4 to 6 inches away, or if you do it multiple times a day? Like, is there any side effects to overdoing it? Can you actually harm yourself?
Yeah, there is a concept in clinical research called the biphasic dose response, which is, in essence, you reach sort of a law of diminishing returns with too much light. I would say you can't really overdo it per se, but the best way to answer that is probably there's not clinical data to support 1,000 joules of energy being delivered to the body. You know, there's not data that supports that. So, if you're looking to sort of optimize light therapy, I would say you're better off probably doing, splitting those sessions into, or splitting your therapy into multiple sessions per day. So say, for example, you had, say you're a bodybuilder and you had a big leg day, for example. So it might be beneficial, like after you're recovering from that heavy leg day, like most people are pretty sore. You'd probably want to do it at, you know, maybe in the morning and the evening just to increase your overall dose, but don't do it all, you know, don't do all, you know, 45 minutes or so in one setting, split it up into multiple sessions per day. So yeah, I mean, you can't really overdo it. And in regards to like negative, like negative downstream ramifications. If you're using like photosensitizing, medications that cause your body to be sensitive to photons of light, then you could see, some negative side effects from that. But that's not necessarily that doesn't necessarily relate to the light. It's more the fact that you're just using a photosensitizing, drug. But other than that, I mean, we're just harnessing with light therapy. You're just harnessing natural wavelengths of light and delivering them at a high intensity to allow you to receive a certain dose of energy in a short amount of time. So, like at a high level, there's really no negative downsides to light therapy.
Yeah, I've my own sort of research into it, photobiomodulation. Even before I came across you guys, I haven't found any literature or people, doctors talking about negative side effects of it, and I don't really think you can overdo it. The only thing, like you said, is trying, just because there hasn't been literature on it yet, which, mm-hmm. I mean, there's no literature on it saying there's negative side effects, which is a good thing, but just because there isn't doesn't mean, necessarily you should spend all day doing this, 24/7 or overdo it, because yep. then, it just hasn't been tested, in that kind of aspect of it. But like you said, it's just taking the natural photons of light and using it to your advantage, like kind of like exercising. Like, yes, there is a threshold for exercising. Exercising is great. You don't want to exercise 24/7. There probably will be some consequences if you do that, but I think it's very, very safe. And I think the benefits of it far outweigh anything that could potentially happen.
Yeah, no, that's a great way to think about it. Just like, just to your point, similar to exercise, yeah, you don't want to be – it's not healthy to be, running 24 hours a day. It's probably not healthy to be basking in red light 24 hours a day, So,
What are some of the future applications of this? I know we mentioned some of the things earlier. The testosterone boost it gives you, the muscle recovery, the skin health, the mitochondrial improvements in function. Do you think there needs to be more research into, say, things like, potential cures for cancer, Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's, things like that? Like, is that potentially something that light therapy, maybe in the right dosages, maybe in the right protocols, could heal? Or is this more of like kind of, you think, where it's at now is probably where it's going to stay?
Yeah, no, I actually think there's going to be a ton more research with respect to wavelengths of light and the benefits in sort of traditional kind of Western medicine. So like for the purposes of cancer, for example, I think there's probably going to be a ton more research in the next 5 years, 5 to 10 years with respect to that, considering the prevalence of cancer, especially in the U.S. So, on that note, just it should be published, I would imagine, close to the time this podcast goes live or shortly thereafter. Dr. Hamlin, myself, and then Justin published a meta-analysis of photobiomodulation and oncology and cancer. And at the end of the day, when you look at studies so far that have used light therapy for the purposes of cancer, it's sort of a mixed bag. But Dr. Hamlin introduced the concept of now that we have access to devices that can treat much broader areas of your body, there should be more studies with respect to the concept of full body photobiomodulation and not just treating narrow or small areas of your body. So at the end of the day, I think a lot more research is going to be done regarding light therapy over broader applications of our body, not just like, not just little, small dime-sized areas. But also I think light therapy, the one big constraint right now with light therapy is that you're limited to delivering it primarily through the surface of your skin. So my background in med tech, we used a lot of catheters to deliver certain therapies, catheters that were inserted into a vessel, for example. So I think there could be some interesting things around delivering the right wavelengths with the right intensity, but to certain areas of your body, internal organs of your body through the vasculature or like through your gastrointestinal system. So I think it'll be an interesting run over the next 5 to 10 years with respect to light therapy and the clinical research.
Yeah. How would you, I'm just kind of like trying to picture that. How would you deliver that light therapy not through the skin? Like, I mean, just kind of sounds sort of esoteric.
Yeah. So, you can do a lot of unique things with catheters anymore. Everything from cutting plaque out of an artery, To delivering, you know, a bioabsorbable stent inside of an artery. So there's a lot of unique things you can do with catheters, but I'm just kind of throwing out concepts or theories right now. But I could very well see, you know, in the traditional world of med tech and or in the traditional kind of Western medicine, you know, that a concept like that could be introduced. You know, what happens when someone has a GI problem, instead of prescribing a bunch of medications, what if you introduced, you know, light through the GI system to help heal internally? Because right now you're not going to really be able to reach someone's GI tract through, you know, externally to their body by applying light. So I think different ways to deliver that light is going to be probably an interesting concept in the future.
Yeah, it sounds really fascinating, and I think Scott, I think you're the guy that's going to come out with that next invention to be able to do it.
if you find me, you know, the venture capitalists that want to fund that, you know, we'll go to town.
Scott, man, it's been an awesome interview. I really appreciate you taking the time and coming on the show. Just kind of wrapping things up, is there a last takeoff, send away message you'd like to leave our Elite Man audience regarding light therapy, photobiomodulation, you know, maybe where Juve is headed in the next couple of years, what you guys are doing, and then also a place that our listeners can check out more about the work you're up to and the device you have?
Sure. Yeah, I'll start with the latter. So if you want to learn more, I would encourage you to go to two places. One is just juve.com. That's our website, J2O's2V's.com. And there's a learn section. So if you're a nerd like me, go to that learn section, and there's a ton of information there if you want to pour into it. All supported, all referenced and supported by clinical data. So go there. If you want to stay high level, kind of cool to go to our reviews, the reviews section on our site. You'll find that sort of in the top navigation. It's kind of really, I mean, we've got, I think, you know, close to 120, 130 five-star reviews now. So you can see like what customers are saying in their own words, you know, not edited at all from us. So that's kind of cool if you want to stay kind of high level. But that's what I encourage people if you want to learn more. But the message I'd probably leave with respect to light therapy or photobiomodulation in general is I'd probably keep it simple. I would encourage everyone to just start paying a little closer attention to light, you know, similar to like what we talked about before, similar to how almost everyone that's, you know, sort of into their health pays attention to what they consume in terms of like proteins, fats, and carbs. Like we should probably start paying a lot more attention to like wavelengths that we consume during the day. And so if you're in a cutting phase and trying to really lean out, you're probably going to eliminate, you know, carbs during the back half of your day, right? Especially in night. Well, I would say if you really want to optimize your overall health, you should eliminate, you know, blue light, you know, as much as possible, you know, hopefully entirely, you know, during a certain part of day, just because our bodies metabolize that light differently at certain times of day. So yes, I would say don't try not to get lost too much in the details, but just start paying a little bit more attention to how, what type of light you're being exposed to during the day.
Yeah, love it, man. Totally dead on with that as well, and it's something I certainly have to get better at myself. But guys, definitely check it out, whether it's his photobiomodulation light, the Juve light, which I personally think is phenomenal, whether it's another therapy light out there related to infrared or red light therapies. This stuff is really powerful. It works. The science backs it. The literature is behind it. I love it myself, and I'm really excited about the future of photobiomodulation and the benefits it can have on people. So, Scott, thanks again for coming on, man. Really do appreciate it. Take care, and I will talk to you soon.
Awesome. Thanks, Justin. Appreciate it, man.
As always, if you haven't joined the Elite Man Mastermind group on Facebook yet, do yourself a big favor and get on that right now. Connect with thousands of guys just like you who are looking to improve themselves every single day. This is the best Facebook group on the planet, totally free, and this is going to push you, motivate you, inspire you, give you tips, advice, and strategies for helping you master the biggest challenges in your life. EliteManMastermind.com will take you right to the group on Facebook where you can join. It's a closed group, which means it might take a couple minutes, a couple hours for you to get accepted in by one of the moderators or myself, but I promise you, we will get you in if you're not a spammer and you don't have a creepy profile. So go to EliteManMastermind.com if you haven't yet. Join the group. You're going to absolutely love this and join a collection of thousands of amazing guys just like you who are looking to improve themselves and help you out along the way.
All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast interviews with all of our incredible world-class guests from the lifestyle, health, fitness, business, and social worlds absolutely free. Subscribe now, guys, if you haven't already, and enjoy all future episodes. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an awesome review. We really do appreciate it.